life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. Dynamite. I'm Brian Smith, the man who increasingly finds himself dynamite laughing like Sammy Maudlin. And this is episode 16 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Once again, I'm joined by my co-host and the man who wants to buy your house, Anthony Askew. And we have a guest tonight, the man with a total of 4 posts on the Smallville Forum Kryptonite site, from the Kitacon Committee, Leon Everett.
Hello, everybody.
I was doing my research earlier today for your introduction.
Oh, man.
I think you say you're a big fan of the Chloe Clark duo, I think, was one of your posts. And there was some sort of strange abbreviation of the two names together.
Yeah, the Chlark.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure how you'd actually pronounced it, otherwise I'd put that in the introduction.
Dishing the dirt.
No one escapes my internet browsing.
Yeah, you are the man at that, the
yes,
PI.
That is correct, internet detective. Hunting down cosplayers who don't want their identities revealed. Leon is on tonight to talk Fooly Cooly. But before we get into that, let's get to know Leon a little bit better, as we normally do with our guests the first time they're on. So what kind of cartoons were you into before you sort of knew what anime was and before you were an anime fan?
Well, first sort of anime watching, I can never remember what the first ones were exactly, but it was around 95, 96.
Mm-hmm.
So I was about 10, 11. So before then, it's just the sort of standard early 90s, like 80s rerun type stuff. He-Man, Thundercats, all that stuff. Transformers, Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, a terrible thing was I was watching those things when I was 15 to 20. I think it was 14 when the Turtles film came out,
and
I think I got excited about the comics sort of early because they came out in like the late '80s, sort of mid '80s to late '80s was when I became aware of them, and so I was really into like black and white indie boom at the time, and so I was really really excited when the Turtles film was coming out, and then let down by it.
You don't like animatronics and guys jumping about in suits.
That bit was fine. I did like the song. I did like Partners in Crime's Turtle Power. And, did listen to the soundtrack an awful lot. So you said 95, 96 was, you think, was around the time you got into anime. What would be the entry point for that?
Oh, it's hard. I can never remember what the first one was, but it probably... one of the earlier ones would have been like Akira on VHS, and probably around that time as well would have been, I'm trying to think timeline-wise, I think it might have been slightly later, like probably a year or two later when I started watching things like on the Sci-Fi Channel, like Gyver and like Ninja Scroll, and well, I think it was the Sci-Fi Channel Bravo and BBC Two, Channel 4 as well.
I think, yeah, Channel 4 was showing things like...
Legend of Four Kings?
That's the thing. I was numbers and legends of something. I think they showed things like Judge and basically the kind of stuff which didn't sell very well.
Yeah.
Manga, so obviously they were getting some use out of it by sticking it on TV. And yeah, that was the stuff I was aware of, but I didn't have satellites, so I never saw the stuff they were showing on any of the satellites.
They had stuff like Gyver, and then they used to have all these... like anime nights and stuff. So you'd have, I think that was a bit later though, but you'd have just reruns, Wings of Honeyamese, Ghost in the Shell, Street Fighter animated movie, a couple other things. Things like Moldiver, which they showed like edited on like a Saturday morning, as well as Evangelion as well.
Yeah, cause I know a few people who were got in via Tenchi around the time being shown on, I think, on those channels. So were you part of the anime on sci-fi IRC scene, or was that?
No.
So I know a lot of the people we know who were, they came in Like, they were a big part of that, I think. And
so. Yeah, yeah. I've heard all the old school stories. But yeah, no, I was far away from internet communities and stuff like that. Like, the only people I knew who were interested in the same stuff as me was, like, a small handful of friends and my cousin Marvin.
Yeah, that was pretty much the same, except without your cousin Marvin. Didn't know him.
I missed that and a lot of VHS lens then, in that case.
Well, I was getting... VHS Phantoms, I've mentioned on previous episodes. So I was getting stuff from Jumaku.
Yeah.
Who I think some of those people were involved in Minami at some point. I'm not sure they are now. And the Anime Central lot, who are obviously where Iacon spawned from.
Ah, yeah.
Right, so what was the first convention you went to?
I always extend this story really long, because it was meant to be Iro 5.
Yeah.
There was, like, an issue with my, like, check for payment. Wow, checks. But yeah, check for payment, so it bounced at a time where I think registration had full.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I got my letter for it for quite a while, so, like, I missed out on a place. Because I was meant to go there with friend Lewis. But then my first con was the year after AmeCon 06 in Leicester.
See, everybody knows Iacon 05 was the best con ever.
I used to hear that for so many years.
It still should be heard, because it's absolutely true. I wasn't even old enough to drink then, yet it was still my favourite con. That says a lot.
Is that the last one with, like, fan subs? Because I remember
AmeCon 06 fan subs?
No, Iacon 05 was the point at which they had to remove all the fan subs from the programme, as far as I'm aware. There may have been a few slipped through, but that was around the time where it was getting brought up.
Mm. See, it's pretty iconic.
Yeah, people kept talking about, was it the show with the girl who, like, kills the guy multiple times. I always forget the
name. Yeah, Dokuro-chan.
Yeah, Dokuro-chan. It was meant to be, like, a big showing of that or something.
Yeah, there was. I'm sure it was, like, packed out the...
Mm.
Like, the video room or whatever it was in. Yeah, Iro 5, the con. Sorry to rub it in, Leon, but...
So what would you say is the best con that isn't Iro 5, and Leon, that you've been to? Is it
best?
Do you appreciate the Kitacons running them, helping run them, or?
In terms of with Kitacon, went to the first one in 09, very last minute, and had a really good time there. And I think it was just mainly the atmosphere and stuff that brought that on. So in 2010, I was a gopher, a poor gopher, but a gopher, and then. For this year, I joined the committee to help out. But I'd say my favourite experience at a con was probably Kitacon 2010. And I think my favourite cons off of that are going to be ones like... I think AmeO7, because there's one like AmeO8, which a lot of people didn't like, because that was like the third year in a row, and... all the queues and stuff were horrible. It was quite disorganized. But I did have quite a good time, but I think that had nothing to do with the con. So it's very hard to judge it in that way.
Yeah, was that the one with the cage, or was that...
Yeah, that was
I was about to ask, was that the Dark Knight? Yeah. That's how I kind of realized which con it was.
It
was pretty good. Pretty good.
And the other question I was asked is, have you ever cosplayed?
Yes.
What as?
Drag kicking and screaming. I've only done two sort of cosplays, but they're very sort of easy and casual ones. First one was July 2009 at the MCM Expo summer.
Yeah.
I was in a Scrubs group, the TV show Scrubs. I was Turk from Scrubs, and that was very easy. Just involved ordering the scrubs and changing where a pocket was. So I did have to do some sewing, but...
That's very hardcore.
Yeah. but it was quite fun, actually, because for ages before that, it was one of those things where I'd be like, yeah, cosplay, can't be bothered. It just seems so much effort, so much expense for something you're going to wear, like, once or twice. So I thought, But it's quite fun doing it in a group, especially at something like an expo, because you can't really walk, say, especially if it's like something like Scrubs, which quite a lot of people like. It's one of those things, you can't really walk further than a couple paces without the whole group being stopped for photos.
Yeah.
And then I cosplayed again at IO09, but it was a very casual cosplay for pictures and stuff on the Thursday night. And that was in a South Park group with a lot of the same people. And yeah. I was token, surprise, surprise. But yeah, it was good fun.
And you've had continual demands from people to cosplay Garterbelt from Panty and Stocking, haven't you?
Yes, Garterbelt and Saz from from Final Fantasy 13. I get continual.
But I don't know whether people. Is this a spoiler and you don't want people to know? But you are doing that, aren't you?
Yeah, the both of those are actually happening and will likely be happening for the first time at Aya this year.
Look out for that.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. And you've run events in the past at cons as well, haven't you?
Well, one event, yeah.
Yeah. Which was?
We'll run again. It was titled McKinima and Beyond, and it was basically sort of Madstravaganza style, actually. But
loggerheads now.
That inspiration. But it was sort of done in a vein slightly in the sense that my videos were to do with like films and like skits and stuff that are made in like video game engines. But I added the Beyond part because I wanted to make it more about fan works and not limited to McKinima. So it involves stuff like the Monty Ohm, Hey Lloyd, and Dead Fantasy videos, and other things of that ilk, like the Half-Life 2 one. I can't remember the title of it, but really good Half-Life 2 one, done by a couple of students. But I've done that in the past, and interested in doing it again, and likely do it in the next Ketagon. Was tempted to do it this year, but luckily, in hindsight, I decided against that, and that was a good idea because I was quite sleepless this Ketagon.
Mm.
And you saved yourself the headaches of all the technical problems in the event rooms. Right, any other questions you've got, Anthony, before we move on to Ruby?
Already know quite a lot about Leon. I'm trying to think of something that you could tell that people don't know about him. A lot of people don't know. What's your present favourite anime? At the moment, what is your favourite?
Oh.
Will this tie in with the episode, perhaps?
actually, very closely. Because, as you probably know, but listeners will not, very hard at picking favourite stuff. I usually have a group of stuff which I would title my favourite. So I'm a film buff, but people always ask me my favourite director, favourite film, and I can't answer that question. But I'll probably answer on mood. And usually when people ask me about the anime one, it usually just relates back to things of my past. So a lot of the times I'll say something like Ghost in the Shell, the first movie.
Yeah.
Always really enjoyed that. It's been one of the more important animes for me in the sense that it's one of the first, and one of the first ones that I watched and would break it down. It wasn't just all about action and stuff. There's actually like ideas behind it. So there's that. And another one I'd probably say would be Foolie Cooley.
Oh, that's quite strange because I believe that is the focus point of this episode, which probably ties us on quite nicely.
What amazing. Cracking segue.
It was. We got there.
Right. Okay. You two have watched it today, haven't you? And, I didn't get a chance because I was at work. But I did watch it. Oh, let me check my post from my irregular best anime of the 2000s. December 2009 was the last time I watched it. I did watch one episode this morning, which was the fifth episode, which is my favourite. For various reasons. But yeah, when was the first time you guys saw it in any form? And
well, I would say this was back in the day when... Oh, I'm trying to think of the day. I used to buy a lot of, get ready to slap my wrists, Hong Kong bootlegs, all my anime were bootlegs, Reading Zero, and...
Quantum Terrorism.
Well, yeah, apparently so. But I don't do that anymore. I don't do that anymore. I don't even download music. Always iTunes. and Fooly Cooly was one of the ones I bought. And at the time, I'm trying to think what year it must have been. Oh, God, it was 2006, 2005?
I don't know. I'm not aware of the ebbing and flowing of Hong Kong bootlegs, so...
so you wouldn't know the exact release date as such. but, yeah, at first, I didn't really like it. But I'll get to that later. So, go on with your experiences.
You go ahead, Leon.
Well, for me, it was sometime during 2006, I would say, because I remember hearing about it for ages, because obviously the title itself, FLCL, I should see everyone think, what's FLCL, what's that, for ages, and then finally decided to download it for some reason.
Well, that's even worse than a bootleg.
I didn't fund any terrorism.
I bet you were seeding the download, though.
But I didn't watch it for quite a while. I'd check out the first episode and watch like the beginning, because I knew it would be good, just had a feeling and some of the pedigree behind it. But I didn't watch it for ages for some reason. And one day I was just in the mood and put all six episodes in a timeline and just watched it. And... watched it again the next day, and then 2 days later watched it again. It just clicked. It's one of those things that just clicked with me.
Did you watch it in Japanese originally, or
no? Well, the download that I got and still have to this day is a dual audio one. It's one of that horrible is it OGG format?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or OGM possibly. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Possibly OGM as well. So I've decided to watch it in English, because I just thought, let me try the dub, blah, blah, and quite like the dub. Most of the times that I've watched it, and I've watched it many a time at this point, have been in the English, though I have listened to it in Japanese once or twice, all the way through.
See, my viewing today was actually the first time I've watched it in Japanese. So there you go. And I actually preferred it in Japanese.
Yes, first time I saw it, I thought it was at Minami 2000, but that doesn't add up, so it must have been at Minami 2001.
That is so hot off the press.
That is profound.
So hot off the press.
Yeah.
It would have had to travel in time for me to have seen it. I'll just check the dates of when Minami 2000
They probably wouldn't have finished editing by then.
It came out in Japan in April 26, 2000. The first volume did, but Minami was in March that year, so it must have been 2001. And the thing is, I think the first volume, they had a fan sub, but the other ones were the DVDs that somebody bought, because the Japanese DVDs, for some reason, volumes 2 to 6, they put English subtitles on, but not the first volume. so that was the point, and I liked it straight off. Yeah, so 2001, I think during 2000 I was getting kind of jaded with anime, and I think that Minami, particularly because the 2000 Minami, I had like the convention of hell. Not the convention itself, but just getting there and then getting back and my car breaking down on the M40. Like the starter motor getting torn out on the M40, not having the AA, so I had to pay a huge amount of money. So I was kind of jaded with conventions, but decided to go to that. And between Fooly Cooly, which, yeah, liked, it was hit exactly what I want from a cartoon, and Hallie and Goo, which I think also they showed that year, which
was the very first episode of that sort of made people walk out, because it freaked them out too much. But yeah, but that was the first time I saw it, and then I think I saw the remaining episodes at conventions at that sort of within the year, because I think it only they got all six out fairly quickly, the looks things. Yeah, it just took a year for them to get all six volumes out in Japan.
Yeah, and well, it was only two episodes. Oh, in Japan it was one episode per volume.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, they did that when they released it in America as well.
That's nasty.
No, it was two.
two yeah. episodes per DVD. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's still harsh. Or one per DVD is a kick in the face.
I think I was thinking of the Dragon Ball Z ones, which are one per DVD.
What?
Yes, I've got the. Yeah, because I bought... Hang on, my voice is probably disappearing as my head disappears behind a desk. Yeah, so I bought the Sync Point... I bought Volume 1 and Volume 3 of the Sync Point releases, which were the American ones. And try to see what date of when they came out. And this was... This Anime Gamers as well was part of this sort of... They kind of had this... they were planning on releasing DigiCarrot. Don't know if they ever did... And I can't remember the other show. It was sort of like a anime version of The Munsters was the other show they were planning on releasing. But I think they might have only got one volume of that out. But the their release was great because you've got like sizable booklets. So I'm looking at volume 3 here, and it's got the comic sequences in the booklet.
See, bootlegs don't come with...
Well, there you go. But the only thing is, neither did the MVM version in the UK. So my volume 2, which is the MVM one, because I think at the time I bought 3, nobody had volume 2 on there, which would have been an Icon sometime, I think 2003 maybe. They didn't have volume 2, so I just bought 3. Yeah, so apart from, it's identical in every way, but you don't get the booklet in the MVM one, or at least I didn't. Presumably it would have been expensive to print out, and it may have been part of the reason why we don't have a Sync Point anymore, because they were printing up these glossy thick booklets for their releases. But yeah, it comes with, let me go through it, so you've got translation notes explaining jokes which some which probably don't need referencing, like explaining who John Woo is. Probably
who?
Not. And but some other ones with like sound effect jokes and things.
You see, my reason for buying it originally was not necessarily to watch it as such. I know it sounds silly, but at the time I was that must mean I was bought in about 2003-2004 possibly, because that's when I was making AMVs. I used to see something in an AMV and say, I like the look of that. I could use that myself. And that's how I ended up buying it in the first place. So I'd give you that little bit of trivia.
So have you, a lot of the DVDs you bought have just been for making it?
At the time, definitely. Not so much these days, but at the time, a great deal. It was more than the watching, it was the AMVs, yeah.
So you've accidentally seen a lot of anime over the years.
Accidentally, yeah. Obviously, I would never edit anything without watching it first. I would watch it, obviously. So, but yeah, a lot of stuff I fell upon just through seeing it in other AMVs and thinking, oh, that looks pretty good, or, you know.
It does look very good. I mean,
it does.
It's got loads of great animators and animation.
Gorgeous.
In it. So, were you Gainax fans before coming to it? Were you interested in Gainax because of Evangelion or anything else before that?
Before that, probably not. Probably just Eva, really.
Yeah, pre-Fooly Cooly, I only knew Gainax for Evangelion.
Because I think the first thing I saw of theirs would have been Otaku no Video, which came out on VHS through Anime Projects. And that was when I got into anime in 95 and happened to coincide with the time, my year out at university. So I was working in industry. So all of a sudden I had a paying job and didn't have to pay much rent and technically didn't have to pay much tax either because it was an industrial placement.
and say, oh, all of a sudden I've got loads of money and I've got this new hobby. I'll go and buy every single VHS tape I can possibly lay my hands on.
Do you still own those or are they long gone?
No, most of them, I think we've mentioned before, most of them disappeared at Icon 2003, which was the con where I came away with more money than I went into.
Oh, God.
But yeah, so yeah, I would have gone from Otaku no Video to Evangelion and then to Fooly Cooly. And so, yeah, the people working on this that I'm still big fans of, like you had Hiroyuki Imayashi, who did storyboards for episodes 1, 5, and 6.
The manga scenes and stuff in particular, yeah. Wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was. Who obviously gone on to do Dead Leaves and Gurren Lagann.
Panty and Stocking.
And Panty and Stocking.
Yeah.
And he's one of these names who's apparently mysteriously disappeared off the Gainax website that people were... But then, yeah, so it was him, Yo Yoshinari, he also did some storyboarding. I'm just seeing if Sushio worked on it as well. Let's see if his name crops up. But he's technically, I think, freelance. Yeah, he was on, he worked on the first 5 episodes. But those 3 names supposedly disappeared from the Gainax site a few weeks ago. And people were going, oh, what are they doing? Are they planning on starting their own studio, what's going on? But then...
Really, that recently? Wow.
Yeah, and then Yo Yoshinari was the guy who did, I think, the last, the current Gainax top picture, which will probably go away by the time this episode comes out, which was a picture of all their robots. So yeah, Canty from Fooly Cooly, Gunbuster, Diebuster, Eva, Unit 1, that maid, I can never remember her name from that show with the robot maid in. And the Transformers versions of Panty and Stocking on there. But
that's a pretty good picture.
It is a pretty good picture. Yeah. Let's see if I can find it for you. But the other rumour flying around, which made me think this is connected, is that Takashi Koike, director of Redline, who a bunch of those guys worked with on that and on Travel Fist Planet and on Dead, he worked with them on Dead Leaves, is rumoured to be designing the character designs for the new Lupin the Third show.
Ooh.
And obviously, Fooly Cooly has, episode 5, which is my favourite, has a ton of Lupin the Third references.
Yeah.
And so I'm just hoping those two rumours connect, and it's the guys who worked on Panty and Stocking and Gurren Lagann and the guys who worked on Redline doing a new Lupin, either film or TV series. That, again, that... They originally announced a TV series, then they quickly changed the announcement to a new TV project. But something's happening with Lupin.
Something's going down, yeah.
What was I looking up? I can't remember.
The Gainax picture.
Yeah. Ah, that was
all the robots.
That was it.
In answer to your question before, I wasn't sure that Gainax had done Wings of Honyami, because I'd seen that loads of times on Sci-Fi Channel. But... Yeah. I think they actually did, meaning
they did,
that, Evangelion and Wings of Honey Amis were the two things I would have seen before seeing Fooly Cooly.
So that's one of those shows I should have seen that I have not, the films I should have seen but have not seen, for whatever reason.
But yeah, they used to love playing that and the 2 Patlaborg movies all the time.
Yeah, I've seen the Patlaborg, because I think they showed all of those on Channel 4 as well, but I think I taped it off TV and then never got round to watching it. And yeah, the stuff I've taped off TV long died in the great VHS mold of 2006.
Was there like a flood or something?
Well, no, there was apparently, because I moved in 2006 and then I just boxed all my tapes up. And then I rebought a VHS player off eBay. And a DVD recorder with the plan of, okay, I've got a bunch of stuff on tape that I know has never come out on DVD. Things like the TV edit of Repo Man and the TV adaptation of the comic Bogeyman that I think, okay, right, these are never going to come out on DVD, or so I ought to get them transferred onto DVD myself. So I then dug all the tapes out and discovered all like the... shop-bought blank cassettes and developed this mould. And I thought, what the hell? And looked it up on the internet, and apparently, yeah, there was like this the weather conditions in 2006 caused loads of people's VHS collections to all get killed by this mold which suddenly sprouted on them.
I would not be impressed.
The mix of heat and humidity of that particular year was just like death to video.
Oh, God. Actually, the North's a very different matter, so I'm sure mine are in perfect working order.
But all Winterfell and its warm coldness, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like all the proper authored tapes, so like all the films I bought, yeah. All the volumes of Eurosura I'd got from Anime Projects and imported from Animego, they were perfectly okay, they weren't affected by it at all, it was just like the blank cassettes.
Oh, I thought, sure, there was nothing on them anyway. So
what are those? No, he used them to record TV shows.
Oh, yeah. I thought this was pre-recording.
No, this was.
Oh god,
no, this was stuff I'd recorded off TV that I thought, oh, okay, this is never going to come out. I'm never going to get another chance to see this. Oh, I'm quite right. I'm never going to get another chance to see this. That's it. All I have is my memories and email to hope somebody else taped them and ripped them at some point. I have got some really old stuff since then, which I never did have, like. A live-action Christmas Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video. I keep getting this stuff in the vague idea I might stick it in Mass Extravaganza sometime, but there's always better things come along.
That picture's pretty good for those who are listening and intrigued.
Yeah, I was wondering of that picture, actually. Which one's the panty and stocking?
They're the one sitting on...
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The colours make sense, yeah.
Yeah.
So who's the guy, who's the massive one at the back?
That's Gunbuster.
I thought so, it looks so familiar. That's awesome.
This isn't very good radio, guys.
Discussion of pictures. Well, no, they change it every week, so when this comes out on Monday, there'll be a different picture up there.
So. Could we not save this, or would that be against...
Well, I think I can find a... I think somebody will have copied it somewhere, so I'm sure if I can find a link, I'll stick it in the show notes.
Right.
Best robot in that picture is Conti there.
Oh,
yeah. We should probably
get to that. Yeah,
yeah. Is there anything you guys want to talk about the contents of the show, seeing as you've watched it more recently than I have?
Ask you. You can go first.
Okay, I'll. Well, I started watching it again last night because I thought it's been a very long time, and I put it on straight in my PC, and I remembered, oh yes, I'm using a bootleg here, and on it comes. And the sound quality is far worse than I remember. The audio levels will go up and down, right throughout. So, obviously that doesn't really affect me viewing experience because I've seen it many times before, but...
27 quid on HMV.com if you want to go and buy a proper copy.
I think I paid about 7 or 8 quid for this way back when.
Think of all that terrorism that 7 quid's bought.
Exactly.
We'll not make any references. But, yeah, as I say, I never originally liked it. I felt it just... Well, I actually said on Twitter that I'm finally starting to understand it. And perhaps because I was young at the time or just being stupid, I didn't really know what was going on at the time, I'll be honest.
I saw that post and Unsp was like quite shocked.
Yeah, and she was like, oh, how didn't you understand? But basically at the time, I probably didn't understand it as well as I do now. But yeah, I think everything about it, it gets better with age. The more I watch it, the more I like it. The soundtrack is glorious. Would you agree on the soundtrack, everyone?
Yes, yeah. My note here is it spawned 1,000 Japanese indie fans. Because I think there was certainly a lot of people who got into sort of that sort of indie Japanese indie rock. Off
by the Pillows.
Pillows soundtrack for the show. Mm. And it's not just the fact it's good music. I think they use it well.
It does.
They know how to use audio cues. I think they do it even better in Panty and Stocking later on. Some of the same people did.
But there was something watching it through this time, it kind of reminded us of Scott Pilgrim. There was something very Scott Pilgrim-y about it.
Obviously, is it more sort of kineticness of everything? How everything's always moving.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pop culture references. And just it's very explosive in the sense that it unhinges itself from reality at like
every couple of things. Yeah, definitely, exactly. And obviously, I've never read the Scott Pilgrim comics. I'm only going off what I've seen in the film. But yeah, obviously.
Regarding the music, if we're on the topic of the music, that for me is a massive part of why I really love the show and why I've probably watched it so many times as I have. Because as you guys were saying, it's just picked perfectly for the scenes that it's used on.
Yeah.
Because I find in some like anime that I've seen in the past, where it, especially since sort of the 2000s, where it became a big thing for like a record label to sort of sponsor a show and put their latest band song on it, those always feel sort of like, yeah, this is meant to go here type of thing. But with the, not just the Pillow songs, but also the ones that were composed by, I think his name is it Shinkichi Mitsume? I can't remember. But he's the guy who does some of the less sort of rocky songs. But yeah, especially the way the Pillow songs are used, they just fit the mood and the emotion. And the more times I watch it, the better they fit every time. So like songs which sort of open the episodes, like Instant Music, which opens episodes 2 and 3. It's the same track used for both episodes, and the both episodes open differently, but it just fits so well.
Yeah.
And I think my favourite on the soundtracks would probably be Hybrid Rainbow.
When's that used in the series?
A couple times, but the time it's mainly used, which is probably my favourite scene in the whole show, is in episode 2, where Mamimi is around the site of where one of the recent fires have happened, and Kanti's still looking for like bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Previous episode, and then she's stalking him basically, and he at the time he's wearing the wings and the halo, so she's referring to him as Lord Kanti and all that. And then like there's a bit as he like ascends when he starts to fly off.
And she's like in awe, looking
yeah,
up.
Yeah, she's in awe, yeah. And the music just ramps up. It's just a perfect moment, so much so that I actually had a desktop background, which it was differently because it was a picture of that scene, but it captured that scene perfectly. And I had that as my desktop background for years. Only recently, when I had to reinstall a new hard drive, the version I had desktop icons on there for some reason, so when looking for it again, I couldn't find it. So I've got a different one on there at the moment.
Is it still Fooly Cooly?
Yeah, of course. It's off the similar scene as well. It's like a picture depicting like probably a couple seconds before that moment, but I still miss that one because the bits with the birds flying in the background are... It's just a perfect scene.
So for you, is that your iconic scene from the entire series?
I've got a couple of them, but yeah, that's probably my favourite one that will always sticks with me. Hybrid Rainbow just welling up and Kanti flying off and the awe in Mamimi's eyes at the time.
Mm. See, for me, obviously, doing a lot of video editing with it, I used to... have to rewatch scenes and scenes over and over again. So my favourite, for me, most iconic is in the very last episode when, what's he called, Naota?
Yeah.
Comes flying down with the two.
Oh, yes.
That for me, and all, you know, kind of the sky is all that kind of, what colour would you say? Vanilla sky, perhaps. But no, it's all the smoke around and like the mist. I think it's glorious and it's so well animated.
Well, at that point, he's a man.
He is a man. Yeah, yeah. Which is what it's all about. What about you, Brian?
I'm trying to think because I've not watched it so recently. The things which stick in my mind would be episode one. I think the on the bridge.
Yeah.
Where he gets hit in the head the first time and the ridiculous camera angles and and I think episode 5, of course, the thing which sticks is the sudden switch to South Park.
Oh, yeah.
Style, which completely
Because you're not expecting it the very first time you see it.
No, no.
And because the old thing was, I was introduced to South Park at an anime convention, which would be one of the Shonen Kais. I think they just aired the very first episode on Cartoon Central, I guess Comedy Central rather. And there were some dealers from America. It's back when we had like American dealers come over with stalls to UK cons. And some guys had it on their laptop. So it was also, it was a combination of A, yeah. South Park, which nobody, people were like crowding around their store watching South Park rather than buying things they were selling. And also it was like, oh wow, it's TV shows on the computer, which was something else again. I imagine it must have been like some sort of real player file.
Yeah.
That they downloaded, but,
well, they were from America, so they're from the future. But yeah, there's another South Park reference. I don't know if I caught it right, but which episode?
Is it episode two?
If there could potentially be another one, I think it's episode three or four, where you know the teacher's car gets.
Yes, Kenny.
You see like a little Kenny bobblehead.
Yeah, episode three.
I see. But yeah, that's another little. There's loads of little tidbits like that.
Oh, there's so many Easter eggs in there, like ridiculous amount. Because I remember I've noticed the majority of them. I've noticed because I have watched it like a million times. But then I remember a while ago, after one of my watches, I decided just to research and stuff, and I found a few more. But a lot of the ones were ones I've already seen because like. Yeah. They're like really split second frame ones. So like you've got one in, I think it's episode three or four where, Kanti's in the closet. The scene is, Haruka, she opens the door and like, finds him in there. And the front bit of his face, he's got like a television set for a face, falls off. And then you've got these like, you know, Tingle from, Zelda. Like fairies and that look like that for like a split second before his face connects back again.
I've never noticed that.
Oh, there's loads. Like, I think in the first episode, you've got Mamimi's cigarettes, and you know, she has like,
Never Knows Best.
Never Knows Best on there. In the actual flame, that the bit that's lit, you see there's like animated people in there.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's really weird.
Plus another thing in there, which ties in with the theme of the show quite a lot, is that very very slight animated scenes of characters losing their panties.
Oh yes, I've seen a few examples of that of myself.
So, Nina Mori, she loses hers in episode three, which is like focused around her, and I think it's Mamimi again. It happens in episode four or five. But that one is even weirder because she just walks off and like they've animated Naota just putting his hand at the wrong place at the wrong time.
it probably wasn't included in my bootleg version.
By the Chinese government.
So who's your favourite characters in the series? Well, character, just pick one. I think Leon's already said his. I don't know if he's standing by.
What?
Kanti, your favourite character?
I've said it to you, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said it earlier on. Dreamt this episode, you see.
I'd say my favourite character would probably be Kanti, for a few reasons. One, I love the fact that he is mute. And I love the fact that, despite all the craziness that happens before it, because obviously the shows sort of have their structure, which I really love, where begin the episode, you get the horn, then blah, 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 craziness happens, advert, and then leads to the climax, and then big fight, and then at the end they play, I can't remember what the song is, but the one they play always at the end of the episodes when you've defeated the monster, and it's like back to reality, nothing ever happens in this town. But
Kanti's certainly in the best animated scenes.
Oh, yeah.
When he first kind of pops out from his head and he's stood on the bridge, that looks so cool.
Kanti's just a lovable character. Like I said, mute, He does weird stuff like eat curry, but the thing I really love about him is that he's just so docile and so kind. So, like, just despite the fact that he can kill everyone in the show if he wanted to, he's just so nice. He walks around buying, like, the Playboy or Hustler, whatever the Japanese equivalent was for, like, Grandpa, doing silly errands for the father, and just finding random crap, looking for bits and pieces of himself in sites. But, like, I mean, my favourite Kanti scene that's not the Hybrid Rainbow episode 2 bit with my Mimi is, I think it's episode 5, where they're having the gunfight? Yeah, I think it's episode 5. And, you know, Kitsurabami, the Gandro chick?
Yeah.
She's, like, sniping him for ages.
I know exactly what you're going to say, but go on.
Yeah, and then later on, she ends up in the river because the shot comes back and blows up the car. And then, like, there's a scene there where she's just in the water, and it's just him outstretching his arm.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
She's frightened of him before. Yeah. Like, obviously, as you would be.
It's an awesome guy. I mean, it's just his design as well. The TV on the head thing coming up with the symbols, which are used really well, and the jacket, the superfluous jacket on him. they humanize him in a really nice way, and because he doesn't speak, all of his actions and stuff are just done from his body language. And I think they use that really well, and that just speaks to how, on a greater level, how the animation is as a standard throughout the show.
And he cracks me up in the baseball episode.
when
they're kind of looking for this kind of star player, and he's tossing balls from across the... What do you call a baseball course? Is it a field? I don't know.
Field of Dreams, yeah.
Field of Dreams, and he's just pro, pretty much. Yes. So you think humans could take a lot of life lessons from Kanti's nice attitude to life?
Yeah. Nothing gets him down.
Do you live your life following the way?
No, I need to get the jacket. That's what it is.
Yeah. Everyone should have a jacket like that.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite character, Brian?
Mine would be Haruko.
I thought you were going to say that.
Well, yes, because she's Bugs Bunny to everybody else's either Elmer Fudd's, or she's Daffy Duck to everybody else's Porky Pigs. Really, she's the chaos introduced into the storyline. And yes, and also, she also reminds me of, and I'm sure it's probably a direct reference, Tank Girl to some degree.
Oh, yes.
Which was a big favourite of mine, sort of the early 90s. But yeah, I mean, I generally like all the characters, but yeah, in terms of sort of the chaos, the violence, the humour, the using cats as communication devices.
Yeah.
Oh, the cat. Jesus Christ.
The cats, there's some pretty good cats in this show.
Yeah. I'm sure, I don't know whether you've mentioned this before, Brian, or I've read it somewhere, but did the animators not like animating dogs or something?
I don't know, it's not come from me.
There's a joke, actually, at one of the episodes, because in the English version,
yeah,
they have Haruko, like, previewing the next episode. Like, you usually get on anime episodes.
Yeah.
But, like, it's really smart, because I can't remember if I've watched it in the Japanese version, if she says the same, but on the English version, she's talking about cats and stuff, and then she mentions the Ghost in the Shell guy.
Maybe that's...
Well, what's his name?
Yeah.
And she says, like, Chaffer mentions that he, not that he really likes dogs or that he is a dog or something like that, but it's really sort of smart, sort of capturing the zeitgeist type.
Yeah. See, because that's where I've heard it or whatever, but...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard it, so that could be where if you've been watching dubs, and I've never watched the dubs, then that's probably why I've never...
True. And there's actually a little bit where, in the background, the grandfather sat down, and there's a horribly animated dog sat next to him. I don't know which scene it is, and it's on. I don't know whether it must be a little Easter egg. I presume it's a dog, but it looks awful. I'll try and find that, and I'll get a screenshot of that for the listeners. But yeah, I thought I had some fact, some truth to me madness there. But my favourite character is somebody I was kind of... She's a bit of a sleeper hit for me, and that's Nina Mori.
She's
I think
awesome.
She's a really good character. And
yes.
And she's apparently the daughter of the mayor of the city. What's the city? Mabase or something?
Mabasa.
There we go. And obviously she's got the hots for Nauta. And I just love that scene where he first realizes that she apparently wears glasses. And at the end of that episode, she sticks her finger through the glass to show there's no glass. And she was just lying all along. Because she's just kind of like... enigmatic character, but
yeah, she's very sort of like student type thing.
Yeah, I like her. She's
That does sort of bring me on to a thing I was going to bring up later. But I do like Nina Mori as well because, like you say, with that stuff and the fact that she rigged the voting things, Naruto to be that character and be playing opposite against her. Mm-hmm. Very good and very complex character. Like, so yeah, she has some decent lines early on in the show, like episode 3 where she's in the car with her dad's the mayor with his secretary. You're smart because she says something along the lines of you're smart because you brought a second set of clothes, obviously implying that they've have an affair with her father type thing.
Yeah.
It's like she's obviously been forced to grow up really quickly, probably doesn't see her mum that often. And like, I think it's one of the bigger reasons I love the show, beyond like the instant stuff where music's fantastic, animation is probably one of the best ever, and it's got lots of oddball characters. But it's also like things that you notice on multiple watches, all the subtext and intertextuality.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
So that's why I definitely think the more, every time I watch it again, I like it that little bit more. And that kind of justifies the first viewing that I didn't fall in love with it as much as other people did. Whereas obviously you two guys loved it from the off. So, what about the eyebrows guy? No, loved him.
Yeah, I was a big fan of him. And I think he was definitely a character people liked early on. I think you saw a fair amount of cosplay of him.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love that. See, I was in cons at the time where no one cosplayed cool stuff anymore. So, like,
Ayakon 05 was the opposite. Yeah. Everyone was fully...
I assume. Because I remember, I think it's MAO 7, I saw my first Haruko, and she was really good to the extent that she had, like, the prop guitar, and we were like, oh, awesome. Like, you should have the motor on it, and she flipped it, and it had like a little fan on there where the motor would be, and we're like, wow. I was like, this is amazing. And like, at MA09, there was a guy who does quite a lot of cosplays. I can't remember his name, so I don't want to say it because it might be the wrong guy. But I'm sure it's the guy who recently got the Euro cosplay at Expo this year, and he had like a Kanti one in Atomist mode. And I had to take a picture of him, and that was my profile pic on Facebook for quite a while.
Yeah, I think the thing, as people have got more obsessed with cosplay in the UK, I'm sure it's probably echoed elsewhere in the world as well, is that it's kind of drifted from people doing anime and manga cosplay towards video game cosplay.
Yeah.
Just because there's more as graphics have got better in video games, there's more detail in those costumes. So they feel like they're putting more effort in and making a bigger splash by doing it. But the disadvantage is that I don't recognise anybody's costumes anymore.
Because I suppose there's kind of two, well, obviously there'll be a lot of different kind of cosplayers as such, but there'll be those who appreciate the design of like a fancy like costume dress or whatever. And there'll be those who'll just cosplay characters that they like. Whereas I'll be one who, when I ever do a cosplay, I'll be somebody who I think's a bit of a badass, not because, ooh, the stitching on, I love the design, blah, 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 whereas a lot of people are like that.
So I'll be looking forward to your Pugaru cosplay.
If I turn up at Iacon dressed as a squid, with my face peeking out. Oh, goodness. That would be quite entertaining, actually. Have you watched Puguru yet, Leon?
No, I have not.
do so. Trust me. But yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's something else I want to say about this.
What, your topic that you were on?
No, I'm sick of cosplay now. We'll never do a cosplay episode, I don't think.
You know the perfect thing for cosplay?
What?
Get a talented girl to do it for you.
Yeah, because I'm not much of a whiz kid on a sewing machine, to be honest.
Don't commission from, like, China or whatever, because you'll be severely disappointed.
Is this from experience?
Yeah.
What did you order? Tell me you ordered something hilarious.
It was the Daz cosplay, actually, from Cosplay Foo. Right. Not happy with it.
Is it too big, too small?
Too small, but the fabric is just terrible. I'd rather get someone talented that I know to make one.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of effort goes into cosplaying.
All mine were charity shops and glue and spray paint.
See, the ones I've done so far, the purple T-shirt that I got for Token cost me like £3 off eBay, and on the day I bought like a sheet of A4 cardboard, yellow, cut it into a T. So that cost like £1. That is
you were ripped off, Leon.
£3 cosplay. That's what I'm talking about. And the scrubs I bought cost like in between £12 and £15 off eBay.
Yeah, it's keeping
that's what I'm talking about.
Keeping it real.
Yeah, keeping it real.
That's what I'm about.
I've still got these scrubs. I could walk into a surgery and pretend I knew what I was doing.
And you can do Holby City cosplay, casualty cosplay,
monster.
That's true. Yes.
If we're going to get that on topic, but what is the main deal with Foolie Cooley? What's the big underlying image? The big underlying thing that it's all about, all aimed at.
Adolescence coming up.
Hitting people in the head is intrinsically funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is what it's all about. See, I think...
And airports to other galaxies.
Yeah, because my opinion is that the science fiction and the puberty metaphor and stuff is just background for them to be silly and violent and sexy.
And, oh, definitely.
And to hit people repeatedly in the head with a bass guitar. So I'm kind of the opposite from what you said. My interest in that element of the show has got less and less the more times I watch it. I'm more interested in sort of the animation and the gags and what they're doing on the screen rather than what the writing's doing.
See, I think probably because I've edited that much with it and watched that many AMVs with it, I can't really take anything else out of it in that regard. So the story's probably the most important thing to me now, I guess.
See, animation-wise, I still do get stuff out of it, and not just because of the Easter eggs, but because a lot of stuff that I watch now, while they've got scenes which are like dramatic and sweeping and very animated, Foolie Cooley is 100% that.
Yeah.
And they sort of mix using sort of, not muted colours, but sort of not beaming in your eyes, gaudy colours. They mix that with the sort of drabbiness of Mombasa, which is meant to be a boring small town where nothing happens. And then they mix it with some of the most fluid and kinetic action that I've ever seen. That's why when I watch stuff now, like there was an episode of Panty and Stocking that I watched where I think the cops are chasing them or something like that.
Yeah.
And things are like something, I can't remember the scene exactly, but I'm sure something's fallen from the sky and hitting the ground and making the cars roll and stuff, and there's a bit where their sort of jeep is going in between all the cars and stuff, and I instantly thought Foolie Cooley when I saw that, because it's just kinetic action where the background's moving as well, where everything on the screen is moving, and that happens so much in the show because they experiment and use so many different techniques. I mean, in the first episode alone, you've got the manga part, you've got the 3D matrixy type bit where Nohita gets his head hit, and then they got that spin of Mamimi as she's like, and there's so many little cool things like that. And it's weird how, like, it's very subtle, but from episodes 1 to 6, the animation alters slightly between episodes.
Yeah, it's, let me see, I'm looking at the list here. So, Masahiko Otsuka directed 1, 4, and 6. What else did he do? Let me just check. And then on Shouji Saiki did 3 and 5, and Takeshi Ando did 2. But then you've also got different people storyboarding each episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And different people doing the key animation on each episode. Yeah, so you've got this sort of... and then I think they're letting people have a lot more free reign than you probably see on a TV show nowadays.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the thing you say about you noticing loads of different things each time, little sort of frame gags,
yeah,
is what I experienced with Eurosatsura when I've gone back to it repeatedly. They were clearly back then they were allowed to put in their own, the animators were allowed to put in their own gags, sort of in a chase scene. You'd be loads of like blink and you miss it reference homages and gags in a chase.
Mm.
Which you just can't achieve on TV due to budget and also sort of people wanting. I think the internet's hurt it slightly because you get people who want to sort of review an anime frame by frame rather than watching it as a whole. So they pick out a frame, which might be an in-between frame, which has been stretched deliberately because it looks good when it moves. And then they'll slap it on an image board saying, look how terrible this animation is. That doesn't look like. Which obviously.
Remember Askew showing me a couple of ones from the Bruce Timm DC Animated Universe Superman ones. Whenever he would do his super speed, they'd like stretch him so it looks really funny.
Yeah, there's
like a still frame.
There's a Tumblr which someone set up recently which sort of collects these sort of in between shots where they've done that. Just trying to demystify it for people who kind of don't understand why that's done in an episode. Yeah, so Masahiko Otsuka, what else he directed? He did... one of the Gurren Lagann movies. He's the editorial director on Petty Princess Yuchi. I think that was a Gainax show which nobody talks about.
Sitting in the basement.
It was kind of it was a magical girl show from 2002, and I don't think people talk about that at all. Mahoromatic, that was the show I couldn't remember the name of.
I've heard of that but never watched it.
It's got good action in it, but it's an adaptation rather than something they've written themselves, so, and it's part of the maid craze there was sort of at the late 90s, early 2000s. It's about a decommissioned combat android who gets a job as a maid, if I remember correctly.
I bet she hasn't got a patch on Puguru.
No.
As maids go.
That's why I like Puguru so much, because I had to sit through terrible maid animation at conventions. So Puguru was a breath of fresh air when it came along. And it just sort of mocked it. Yeah, so he only did the OP, the opening for that. Yeah, so he's just done loads of like episode and bits and pieces for Gainax. Nothing really particularly big himself. Shouji Saiki. Just bear with me while the internet catches up with my mouth. He's done some more Mahoromatic stuff. So lots of people worked on that. And, the dreadful He Is My Master. Yes, lots of people who did good work on Fooly Cooly did terrible work on other Gainax shows. I think a lot more of the talent came through on the storyboard and key animation. I think that's probably where we saw most of it. Yeah, Takashi Endo hasn't got much against his name either. But the writer is Yoji Enokido, and he does a load of good stuff against his name. He's got, he's one of these guys who came off Sailor Moon. So he's on Sailor Moon S, Sailor Moon Super S. And then he wrote Revolutionary Girl Utena. He wrote Red Line.
Oh.
He wrote...
Still need to see that.
You do? I don't know whether they've announced it yet, but I'm sure there's an opportunity coming very soon for you to see that.
yeah, I've heard that, yeah. We were discussing this pre-show.
Yes, Star Driver... It's probably the most recent.
I've still not started that, actually. I've got it on my hard drive.
Yeah, I need to finish it off. It's interesting. If you like magical girl shows and you like giant robot shows, then you'll definitely like it. If you only like
100%.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you only like one of them, then you might not. Because it's basically a magical girl show if the magical girls were male and summoned giant robots instead of turning into magical girls.
See, if I don't like it, I'll blame Roy, because he was the one who introduced me to that show.
And yeah, he did the... what else did he do? He did the series composition for Oran High School Host Club.
I never watched that.
Nah.
That's pretty good. It's good gags, and it looks great as well. It's by the same director who did Star Driver and Soul Eater.
Oh, Soul Eater, okay.
But yeah, that one you can pick quite cheap up on as a box set. Yeah, so he's done loads of great stuff. Definitely. I think a lot of those guys who worked on, as I said before, the later Sailor Moons went on to do some very interesting work elsewhere. Right, anything else you want to bring up about Fooly Cooly?
Bits and pieces. You got anything to ask you?
Not really. I mean, I blabber on all day about how every AMV used to have it in for about 2 years. And that's not an exaggeration. And 99% of those AMVs were terrible. So, obviously that doesn't represent any kind of negative quality in regards to the show, because I used it and I made some very good AMVs with it. So, just so you all know that. I should link to some of my AMVs one time.
So, put them on the website.
Yeah.
Do you think you could make a good AMV out of anything?
Yes.
That okay. Sounds like a challenge.
Yeah, it does sound like a challenge. I'm expecting a Kuguru AMV.
If I can find a way to get the... see.
It's got subtitles, that's the problem, isn't it? The only...
Yeah. And the problem, my weak point with AMVs was always comedy. Because there's something about... The kind of comedy that AMV people are into is a very...
Well, you just have to recut it so it's not a comedy. That's the thing. Take a comedy and recut it.
True.
So you turn it... Because then that's funny in itself. It's not funny just to put something funny into
with
things.
A funny song, yeah.
But if you take something funny and then cut it to look like something else, like people do with like those dramatic Seinfeld trailers where they turn Seinfeld episodes into a horror movie or something. Then that's where you can get away with it. Because it's basically the same sort of...
See, maybe that's why I've never had a hit with comedy AMVs. I've always been trying the obvious in regard...
Maybe you're just not funny, man.
That's what... I genuinely think that's where it is. Genuinely.
You've never made me laugh, like, ever. To be fair.
Good. Oh, good. maybe I might do a Dynamite in the Brain special AMV.
Yeah.
With Puguru.
Get on that.
And everything else that I hate that we've mentioned. In fact, I think that's the only thing we've mentioned.
Yeah, in general, we're very positive about most things.
Yeah.
It's our upbeat manner that we have. I'll just go through what my little notes I've got. Yeah, so on my original post I did for this in 2009. Yeah, so my opinion of it, because I was going through like what I thought was the best anime of the 2000s, not wanting to do like a chart, but just sort of list some stuff I'd liked and thought was really great. And my feeling is that it's kind of, well, it's the best show from 2000 to 2009. And my comparison was to Pitchfork naming Bombs Over Baghdad as Outkast's
best single.
As the best single, best song of the decade, yeah. And it's one of those, I think you'd be hard pressed to argue with it. You might think something else is better, but as a consensus opinion.
What came close to getting that title?
I'm trying to think what other stuff I've got on my, that I've got around to making a post. I really liked the film Mind Game.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I saw it on, here's the problem with Mind Game. I don't get too much into it. I'll do an episode at some point. They put subtitles on the Japanese release. Somebody uploaded it to YouTube, and then Cartoon Brew caught it, and they put it on their website, and then, like, all the animation fans, rather than just anime fans, got into it. Then it didn't get licensed because they felt that too many people had already seen it in English, so it killed the market for it in America. But it is it is available in Australia on Region 2 DVD.
That's good then.
I think it's available in Germany as well, another place. But I saw it. I saw it on what a sort of a. I'm putting my fingers in the air and doing a fake quotes.
You're putting them in the air and you just don't care. Nice.
Yes, a fan subbed copy, which was obviously just a copy with the subtitles ripped off the Japanese DVD. And then I saw it in the cinema in 2006. At the BFI.
Oh, right.
Where they were, because they have like every 2 years they do like an anime season. And so I saw that then. And, I think they were running it off a DVD because you could see like abstracts appearing on the screen. I also think I saw Jermaine Greer there watching it. it's celebrity spotting. But yeah, it was good to see it on the big screen as well. And definitely worth going to those BFI things. There isn't one this year, but there should be one last year. So last year I saw Evangelion 2.2 or 2.0 or whatever, whichever one they were showing.
2.2.
I don't know if that one had come out when they showed it. It might have only been 2.0. And I saw Professor Layton movie and Welcome to the Space Show. And then 2 years before that I saw... The Girl Who Let Through Time. But yes, they're good to see on the big screen, and the BFI prices tend to be cheaper than an ordinary London cinema. I think it only cost me like £7.50 a showing or something last time.
Pretty good.
Pretty good going. What else have I got on my list? The TV series Mononoke. That's pretty good, by Kenji Nakamura. The guy who's just finished his C is the series which just finished of his, which is nowhere near as good as Mononoke. but Mononoke is definitely worth checking out, and don't know if that's been... I know his Trapeze, which was a 2009 series from him, has been licensed in Australia. I'm not sure if Mononoke has. There's some interesting things getting licensed in Australia which aren't getting licensed anywhere else. Which means I need to find another source for importing. Paranoia Agent as well. That's on my list.
Nice.
But there's more stuff than what I've actually done posts on yet. And there's some stuff which is nowhere near Fooly Cooly, but I did really like Puny Puny Poromi. And a show which only got a few fan subbed episodes, but there's like probably into the hundreds of episodes now, which is Kuru Neko. Which is, I think it's only animated by one person.
Really?
And it's voiced over by one person. One person does all the voices. And it's basically from a webcomic about this woman who owns cats of various, dispositions and health. And it's kind of a more realistic version of
Cheetah. I was going to say, it sounds really depressing. Really depressing. Poor one guy locked up in his room animating this dark, I think it's depressing a woman series. Oh, woman. Even worse. I'm even more depressing. Not that I've got a problem with female animators.
Why that's the case.
Not that I've got a problem with female animators in the slightest. Or any anything like that, no.
Well, maybe if we get a guest on the lineup, she can take it up with you.
See, that's just me trying to be funny, you see. I'm trying this comedy thing out.
Using misogyny as humor.
Yeah.
Well, we have established that he likes, Joe Rogan and Andy Dick. And I saw that you were retweeting Kevin Smith as well, so I think we could all see where your humour level lies.
Oh, Andy, do you not like Kevin Smith?
I used to like his films, but not anymore. And as a person, he seems fairly appalling.
Fair enough.
Again, I'd recommend the interview with him on that. Did you listen to his interviews on that Mark Maron show?
They morphed in the... What is it? WTF
podcast.
Yeah, they're bookmarked.
Yes. There's one with Kevin Smith as well where he just is stoned all the way through and tries to make a convincing case that being stoned really helps him be creative as a film director, but this is the last film I'm ever making.
See, I suppose there's a long-running theme with my comedian interests with drug addiction and, like, stoners. So that doesn't represent my own views, of course, because I'm a Christian after all.
Okay.
So yeah, that was Fooly Cooly.
Well, now, of course.
And what is Fooly Cooly? What's it mean?
Is it like an onomatopoeia sound?
It is. Yeah, it's just
like
a
groping.
Well, no, because I think they run through various meanings of it and sort of punt on it in the first episode. And but yeah, for ages I was calling it FLCL.
I was before I was watching it,
because I mean I was considering ordering the Japanese DVDs at some point. That's how much I liked it, but I didn't like it. £80 worth of liking it.
Ouch!
Yeah. £80 if it was a 26 episode series would not be as bad.
It would. But,
fair though. Fooly Cooly is the anime I've watched the most times, but that's obviously because of its length. I've seriously watched it probably 20 plus times because I used to put it on before I'd go to bed and then fall asleep during like episode 6.
Bloody hell, you must go to bed either really early and watch it all.
No, really. You know me, I go to bed really late.
Yeah. See, I can never do that stuff before bed to fall asleep to. I've got to, if I'm going to bed, I'm there to sleep.
No, now I have to put on podcasts because if I watch something before I go to bed,
says a lot about the podcast.
No, because it's just people speaking. It's a lot easier to sort of get relaxed with people speaking about stuff. Unless they're like hilarious all the time. Then you just stay awake for the whole thing. But if they're just talking, it's fine because it's quite melodic. But when you're watching stuff, I find it gives me... I'm not giving my eyes enough space from light. So, like, about midday-ish at work, I'll start to feel a bit dizzy all the time.
Me and Brian do have very somber voices. The Barry White of podcasts have been described as...
I'm the nasal of podcasts if I've heard myself recorded before, so I will not be listening to this episode.
It's going to be the round.
I don't listen to it either, so. Apart from when I'm editing.
Actually, I think you should auto-tune me, Brack, yeah.
who do you want to sound like? Snap?
Have me sounding like Samuel L. Jackson.
I did used to have a ton of acid plugins, but I don't know where they've got to. So at some point we could have like a specially remixed podcast at some point if I can lay my hands on those. What notes have I got on this? Talking of themes, one thing I do like how it captures sort of because you got Naota and what's her name who you brought up as one of your favourite characters,
Inamori.
Yeah, who are like 12, aren't they? And they've it captures that attitude of like 12-year-olds of where they get mad at adults for not being adult enough.
Mm.
Because eventually you do learn that that's all a lie, the idea that adults behave like adults.
Yeah. And it's quite interesting in the show as well because like all the people who are meant to be like role model-ish people are quite immature. So you got like his father and grandfather are meant to be his male role models, but they're quite immature. You've got the teacher who can't even use chopsticks herself.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness, a staple character we haven't mentioned is Naruto's brother.
Yeah, well, yeah,
you don't see him, you don't hear him.
Pasuka?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, Pasuka, yeah. But the thing with him, though, why you don't see the character, apart from, like, half of the picture and the thing, and he's going out with the American girl,
yeah.
Is the fact that his presence is obviously massive in the show.
Yeah.
But, certain people fill his void. So, like, his presence being missing in the show, you sort of feel general things that Naruto does in terms of hanging out with Mamimi and playing the baseball. He's trying to be his brother.
Yeah.
But failing at it miserably.
Or make his brother proud or something.
Yeah, like, but he's failing at it miserably. And then you've got, like, Mamimi, who's never really gotten over his brother and, like, calls everyone a sort of,
Takun, I think it is.
Takun, yeah. She has a little pet, Takuns or whatever, and that's just her excuse not to grow up. And then you've got, like, you got, with the, sorry, I'm trying to remember the main thing I was going on to. But yeah, but you've got, like, obviously him being off screen, you have people sort of fill his void. And when I say people, I mean robots with television heads. Because Quarantine Atomisk Mode is basically everything that Tasuka is in terms of in relation to Naruto. So he's
keeping
the
him
bat.
Safe.
Saves the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Swing the bat. That touch. And such and such. And it's very interesting because there's a lot of stuff like that. Because obviously things like Mamimi, I always find her to be like first time watching it, thought she's annoying, blah blah. She has purple hair, but she breaks the rule because she's annoying. And then like, yeah, because you know, I like purple hair chicks, but she breaks the rule. She's just really annoying. But and then like on my second watch and every watch since then, she's a really tragic character to me because obviously she's either living alone or she never sees her parents.
Yeah.
She has a really sort of crappy life, and obviously she's a pyromaniac. She started the fire that Tasuka rescued her from, and that's made like it's not stated, but it's made very apparent throughout the series.
See, she reminds me of someone that I'll have to say after we've done recording. I'm not sure how many people know this person, but I know us three certainly do. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Did either of you read the manga?
I read. Was it a two-part manga? Wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I read the first part, but I've not read the second part. But I do know stuff about it, like how is it episode 4 or 5 where he finds the he kills the robot, finds his dad, and brings him back. Like I found that in the manga, he actually kills his dad, which is pretty.
Also, I've never actually read it myself, but I was reading that.
Oh, Oedipal.
The grandfather has some old war buddy that they go on a suicide bomb.
Yeah.
Thing, as well as, you know, the robot that comes from Ninomori. He becomes an ally to them. So it's very different, but I don't know. It's meant to be a lot more graphic and a lot more.
Yeah, it's funny to like how Ninomori is basically the female version of Naruto. She's very jaded, very slyly emo, and they both share the same sort of NO pattern in their brain, so they can both get things over from the universe. And they both work in the same way that they think all the adults around them are immature and not up to the standard. Very good characters, and they probably ended up together. The thing that's funny, though, because you know the soundtracks?
Yeah, yeah.
The second album, they've got all these dramas, but I'm not fluent in Japanese, so I can't understand what they're saying. But they're meant to be set after the series.
Oh, right.
I need to get a Japanese speaker to translate.
I was going
to
say, you'll probably be able to find a transcript somewhere online if you...
Yeah, that's the thing which I noticed. There's, because when I searched for Fooly Cooly, the second return on Google is a fan site.
Is that particularly wild?
Yes, I'm thinking. Oh, it just struck me how I'm not sure whether you see those sort of fan sites crop up anymore.
Yeah.
If you search for something more modern, you're likely to get maybe like the official streaming site or some illegal streaming site, or if it's a comic.
The thing that's funny about Fooly Cooly World is that I checked it after one. I think my third watch, which would have been still back in 2006. And it was quite vibrant then, like people were still commenting on what their fairies were. And I checked it again early today, and not in the main threads, but people still post there. There's people still
that's crazy. Because obviously it's such an open-ended show.
Yeah.
But I don't like to search beyond that. I think when you do that, it ruins stuff.
My thing with this site is that this is where I got my awesome background of the... my favourite moment in the Fooly Cooly, and it's not there anymore. So screw this website.
But yeah, I tend not to try to pursue anything beyond what's already there, because I sometimes find I get things ruined, or I feel less...
Because people can ruin... You point something out, and you go, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. I don't like it so much now.
Exactly.
That was the problem I started reading... John Kay's website, where he starts pointing out things about cartoons that you used to like, and then you realise, oh no, that's really crappy cartooning.
Yeah.
I no longer like this thing.
It's very dangerous, because I do like to know the science and the ideas behind it, but I hate ruining the magic. Yeah. So, for instance, I love the fact that someone like David Lynch never explains his stuff. People may say it's a cop-out, because they think, oh, he never intended it to be that. People just imagine it what it is, and that's why all these people these days say, oh, it's open to whatever the audience says. But I don't know, I think there's some goodness there. Yeah. I like open stuff, because I think that when you explain away every single thing, it's sort of a show. Like, imagine Twin Peaks, they like explained everything. We wouldn't be talking about it now.
No.
We'd not be talking about it now.
Did you, talking of David Lynch, did you get to see the copy of the TV pilot for Mulholland Drive, which cropped up on the internet a few weeks
Yes. ago? When that came up, I think you may have linked it, Brack. Actually.
Quite possibly, yes.
Yes. And I went to the website and I watched it. It was Mega Video, wasn't it?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, and I watched it, and it was quite enlightening.
I forgot all about that, so I
told you about that on the day as well, yeah.
Yeah, totally forgot about that.
So when I first saw the film, I thought I could see the join, and having seen the pilot, I did see the join. But it's interesting, because I think there's something similar to that in what happens in sort of what he has to do in Firewalk with me. But that's probably an entirely different podcast for an entirely different time.
Yeah. That's the David Lynch podcast.
Yes. The only thing I've got on my list is, so did you watch Abenobashi, the show which a bunch of the people working on this did after this?
Really?
I did want to watch it after kind of starting to like this and stuff, but I heard it's very disappointing. I heard a lot of people kind of going in expecting something and not getting that something.
The thing that's funny with that is that my brother, my youngest brother, he's quite into his anime, quite gung-ho. So when I recommend him stuff, he'll watch it and do it. So when I recommend him, because he draws a lot and he likes to make stuff, so I recommend him things like Unity, which is like a games development engine. I recommend him all types of anime and stuff. And he was talking about Abenobashi. I was thinking, what the hell is this? He slyly put the first two episodes on my external hard drive. So I watched it a bit. I was skipping through, and I thought, what the hell is this? This is crap. And I've been like mocking him for ages, saying, "Oh, Abenobashi, it's rubbish." Is it actually rubbish?
No, it's not.
Good.
It's not.
Don't want it.
It's
I want to eat crow.
It's it's uneven, I think is the best way to say it. Did you watch beyond the first episode?
No, I just watched the first episode.
The first episode is completely unrepresentative of the rest of the series. That is one of the problems. because I think they wanted to do something similar with Gurren Lagann,
and they kind of did something similar in Panty and Stocking. But you know how in this episode 4 of Gurren Lagann, which Osamu Kobayashi did, and everyone flipped their lid saying, this looks completely different to the previous three episodes. We're angry and we're taking it to the internet.
As people do.
Yeah. Abenobashi had that out. So the first episode seems about these two kids and their shopping arcades being closed down. And then at the end of the episode, they get transported to an alternate reality, which is based on sort of role-playing games. And then in the second episode, they get transported to another alternative reality, which is based on wild sci-fi, which is done by Hiroyuki Imayashi. Again, and, it's very much more in the Panty and Stocking style than any stuff he was doing in Fooly Cooly.
Mm.
And so on. So each episode, they jump to another universe, and then sort of halfway through, it sort of kicks you in the gut with explaining exactly what's going on. And
so, how many episodes was it?
It is, I think, 13 episodes. 13 episodes.
Right.
It's not super great. I mean, like I say, it's uneven. Some episodes are better than others. But if you like to see different animation styles show up, it's definitely worth a watch. I picked it up for 10 quid. New on DVD. That was when ADV were closing down.
Right.
I think you might still find it on Beezy's store, because I know last time I saw a Beez stand, they still had like old stock of which they picked up from, I think, whatever ADV had left over at Pinnacle or something, or whatever was going on.
Yeah.
Whichever distributor still had a bunch of their stock, they were still selling it off. But I'm sure it'll crop up, because I think it sold well enough.
Mm.
Elsewhere.
So we've got egg on our faces, Leon.
I'm not saying it's as good as Fooly Cooly, but if you like that sort of playing around with styles, it's worth checking out. Though, yeah, it might kick you in. So the first episode is completely unrepresentative, and the episode which tries to kick you in the gut in the middle might also put you off, because you might have been having fun up to that point, and then it goes, okay, fun's over, guys.
Yeah.
And then immediately goes...
I don't really want to admit to my younger brother that he was correct, so maybe...
Don't do that.
And then immediately goes back to being wacky again in the very next episode, which is the other problem it has, but... There you go.
Yeah, I remember that coming out on DVD. Cause it seems like ages ago now.
It would have been ages ago.
And I remember, obviously, I'd seen Fooly Cooly at the time, and I found out it was blah, 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 similar and blah, blah. I never did it. Just never bit the bullet and bought it. So there you go.
Biting bullets does hurt.
I'll take that. I'll take your advice. I'll do it.
Right, yeah, if we can wrap up then.
Yeah,
Well, I was just going to ask.
Yes, go ahead.
Back and ask you, breakfast. So what would you say is your favourite thing? How would you wrap it, actually? Fooly Cooly, how would you wrap it up? And what brings you pleasure from watching Fooly Cooly?
I'd say it has pretty much everything you could want from a cartoon, except maybe it doesn't have enough people getting hit in the arse. But you replace that with people getting hit in the head. And I think it has everything you want in a cartoon.
Yeah, a head equals three arses, so...
Yes, and pretty much the head in this cartoon is representative of a crotch, so yeah. Therefore it's not too
very
bad.
True. For me, I guess, oh god, what kind of question is this? We're not meant to get asked stuff.
That's what the guest has asked, so answer it, bitch.
Obviously, seeing Nina Mori with the cat ears for those couple of seconds is pretty cute, but I just think because for me, it had so much AMV ammo. I'm taking but yeah, I used it a lot in AMVs. It helped a lot of my AMVs. It looks gorgeous, and no matter how many times I see it, Haruko driving down the street with the trail of cars getting chucked up behind her will crack me up every single time. And it's funny, and it's kind of got this little romance thing involved. So yeah. That's Fooly Cooly.
Because for me, I would say that Funiculi is a show where on the surface it seems like animation directors having a field day, doing what they want because they can get away with it. And on the surface, it is. And that is a very good reason, not a pejorative. But I'd also say below that, like below the surface, you're also getting a show which references a lot of culture, whether it be Japanese and American, but also references a lot of stuff and obviously links back to basic elements of adolescence and thinking you're growing up when you're only 12, and also realizing when you lose those eyes of innocence, and you realize there's no Tooth Fairy, there's no Santa Claus, instead there are adults around me who are just as immature as I am when you're 12. It's a show where craziness happens, but it's not unchained. Everything sort of has a rhyme and a rule. Like, Medical Mechanica have some sort of end game, whether it be ironing out the creases in the brain of the world, or whether it be an atomisk over to our side. But it is a show about maturity, loss of innocence, growing up, becoming your own person, and not growing up into someone else who, whether your older brother, your dad, your uncle, someone else with like aspirations like that, instead of becoming your own person, realizing you don't like spicy food and you don't want spicy food. It's a show where they mix fantastic animation, where they're linking stuff back to their own video from that Japanese expo back in the 80s, where they link all the way back to linking South Park, which is American and semi-recent. It's a show where it's like a perfect cocktail where they've got the animation right, they've got the characters right, they've got the setting right, and they've got the music right, and everything works well, so that you sip it and you don't realise it's alcohol. So you continue to drink. I've watched the show so many times, over 20 times, all 6 episodes, and every time I get something new from it, and I'll continue to enjoy it. It will remain in my top 5 until I probably die, which may be December next year, so you've got time to top it, Japan. Have a go.
But, King, yeah. That was like the King's speech. Very good. But to think it's all done in 6 episodes, it crams so much. It's pretty
impressive.
Because
there's people I know who've watched this who have not got any of the deeper stuff. And when I say deep stuff, I don't even mean like the themes or anything to do with like all the sex stuff that's hidden in there.
Yeah.
Even the animation stuff, there's people who don't get it. Like, oh, it's crazy stuff. I love crazy anime. Woohoo. And it's like, oh. I guess that's a level where you can have enjoyment of it, but there's so much to garner.
Go on.
Remind me of the best. There was somebody arguing once on 4chan that Funiculi wasn't anime. Because
what was the argument?
I think because it was too well animated and it used all these different styles that it wasn't what they thought was anime.
And that guy is a moron.
I suspect he was a troll as well. But if you're in America, I think it might be on Hulu at the moment. I'm sure
it's
I've seen
on Netflix.
I know it's on Blu-ray as well, I noticed. But only for America.
Yeah, it's proving to be a problem. It's like they announced that Dororon Enmakun Mira Mira is coming out in America, and the guys who bring it out, their Blu-rays are sort of their region only, so I was kind of I would have bought that. Oh, no, I'm not.
Sure you would have. So really it boils down to, yes, there's a lot in Funiculi, whether you just want to watch it for a bit of a giggle, off the deeper stuff, everyone should and will
It's one of those things where, in my opinion, it's one of the most rewatchable anime, and not just because of the length of the series or the length of the episodes, because you can, in about 2 hours and 10 minutes, watch the whole thing. But it's a case where There's so much to get from it, even without the Easter eggs. Even if you're just focusing on the animation, there's just so much to get from it. It's just so well done. People sort of argued that, oh, it was a tech demo by the Dynamics, whatever. But
if you want a tech, if you want a tech demo, it's that Final Fantasy film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
which one? The
Advent
the...
Children.
Ah, right.
The one with no story, ask you.
Ah, which was Spirits Within.
Well, that was a tech demo too, yes.
Yeah.
In general, tech demos.
But I'd recommend to anyone, whether you like anime, whatever, cartoons, animation, whatever, yeah, get your hands on FooliCooly, because it is just well animated, which every animation should be. But it's also, there's depth there. There's something to chew into. And whether you see it or not, this is a universal story for adolescence, maturity, but also realizing sort of what your place is in the world. The music is fantastic, done by the Pillows, and the extraordinary Japanese orchestral dude whose name begins with an S.
Oh, I've got the page up here.
Dude.
Shinkichi Mitsumune.
Yeah, Mitsumune. And the tracks that he uses during the show, which are not Pillows used, are really good. And they even use, in episode 3, you know when Nina More starts to sprout the robot from her head and starts to run towards the roof? They play like a Russian composer, Dmitri Kamalevsky, from I think it's a short film called Clown. The track is called Gallop, and it perfectly captures it. It's pure animation. It's a pure animation soundtrack with the do-do-do-do-do-do as they're running towards the roof. It's just perfection. But yeah, the music in it is spectacular, so...
Yeah.
Whether you are weeaboo or whatever, you like to dabble in anime or whatever, give it a go.
Yeah, I think...
And also, the ending theme... is probably in my top 10 ending themes.
I mean, the ending theme video is amazing.
Yeah.
Right, yes. As I said, on my original post, I put, if you can't find something to love in FooliCooly, then cartoons probably aren't for you.
Yeah,
very true.
Pretty much.
Right, plugs. We'll wrap this up before we hit 2 hours.
Oh, God. And I'm boiling as well, because it's hot weather here.
What is the website for Kitacon, Leon?
Kitacon.org.
And there are tickets still available?
Yes, definitely. For the Kitacon 2012, there are tickets still available. We're at the Hilton Birmingham once again. So if you're interested in being around like-minded people, or you are interested in an experience where you can watch anime, read manga, we have our manga room, and be around people who are interested in the same things that you are, I would recommend coming to Kitacon 2012 in the Birmingham Hilton next April.
And what are the dates?
So head to the website.
It's the 13th to the 15th of April.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, those dates, head to the Birmingham Hilton. If you want to register your room now, we have the discount running on the website, so head to the website and you will save money on your expensive Hilton room, which are gorgeous.
Do you work at Hilton as well?
No.
They are pretty good.
Kicked me out.
And, yeah, in the rare case that you don't get a good room, complain.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
They'll upgrade you.
They will upgrade you. And if you're a bit... Princess in the Pea, and you want the perfect room, get an exec room.
Which are
also
definitely really
access
nice.
To the exec lounge, which has unlimited cakes and stuff and beers in their fridge, which I didn't use last time, so definitely use if you do so.
Right, yeah. I'm still presenting 3 panels at Iacon, and they are still 2 on the Saturday, 2 on the Sunday, or 1 on the Sunday, rather. On the Saturday, it will be a Go Nagai panel, where I shall be breaking down the big series that he produced between 1968 and 1976. And then in the Saturday evening, I shall be running Mad Stravaganza 5. And then on Sunday, I shall be running a panel about pro wrestling in anime and manga. And Iacon is still sold out, so... you have to go out on the waiting list if you want to come along. Anything you want to plug, Anthony?
I'm still not running anything for IACON. Though, if you do see me or see any of us, I'm sure we'll all be very polite. Just say hello.
We're all canny. Give good crack.
We're canny, as the phrase goes. And you can follow me on Twitter. Tweet at... It is AntAskew, AntAskew. And my new blog, which is biocybercity.wordpress.com. Get yourself there, get subscribing.
Okay, that's your lot.
Thanks for listening. Buddy,
see you later.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.